This is Two Pence with Mark Anthony Kay and Kevin Mulrine.
So we've got to welcome some new and different people to the podcast this week for our Two Pence. It's fantastic to have the guys from the Progressive Palaver podcast. Isn't that brilliant? So Mark's here. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin. How are you doing?
I don't think you need to introduce yourself, but we'll get the rest of the guys to introduce themselves. So Joe, go first.
Certainly. I'm Joe Beauclair, currently located near Dallas, Texas.
Fantastic. Okay. Ken Gregory?
Oh, Ken Gregory, Philadelphia, PA. I consider myself the director of social networking for the Palaver.
And Paul?
Paul Zotter in beautiful West Grove, Pennsylvania, about 50 miles west of Pennsylvania. I'm in charge of sending the mugs.
And it takes a village.
And someone not a stranger to the Yes Music podcast at all, Ken Fuller. Hello, Ken.
Hi, everyone. Ken Fuller, I'm actually today in Quakertown, Pennsylvania.
Gosh.
Oh, my mother used to live in Quakertown.
Oh, okay. Well, it all sounds very exotic to me, considering I'm in Stratford-upon-Avon in the middle of England, and Mark's in Canada, so we really are pangalactic today. And speaking of pangalactic, we're going to do a Two Pence about my favourite Yes album, which you won't be surprised to hear is Tormato. Okay, so here's the Yes Music Podcast Two Pence statement today. It is, Rick Wakeman said that Tormato could have been a classic Yes album, on a par with Going for the One, he says, given a few changes. So, how far do we agree with this? And this is going to be a little bit, as I said before we started recording, like herding cats, I imagine. So I'm going to pick on a few people to give their view of that statement. So let's start with Paul.
It's great that you chose me first, because I was just thinking about this in the last couple of days getting ready for today. Mm. And I agree with that statement. I think that I'm not a big fan of Tormato. It's probably the last Yes album that I would ever reach to listen for on a regular basis. But when I listen to it, I really do feel like it's just unrefined. Recently, there was a revelation that there could be a missing rhythm guitar track that's there. Mm-hmm. And there's just something about this record to me that seems unrefined. And when I compare it to something like Going for the One, I think that's one of the main differences for me. Going for the One seems completely refined, beautifully done, worked out to its optimal expression, where Tomato feels to me like it just was kind of done in a rush and left to go.
Well, I mean, one of the rumors about it is that the band were intending to go back into the recording studio to add more overdubs, but they were surprised to see that the record company said no, and they had to release it as it was. But I think one of the classic problems with it that I think most of the band members have mentioned is that there were too many hands on the mixing desk. So it wasn't properly produced, they say, wasn't properly mixed. Everybody was trying to get their parts higher in the mix. Is that something you recognize, Joe?
Yeah, I would have to say, it's difficult to say, because generally speaking, one of the problems I have about Tormato is the mix and the production in general. I think it, you know, part of that unrefined thing that Paul's talking about is that it sounds like it was recorded on someone's four track somewhere. Getting on top of a mix on something that sounds, you know, rather sophomoric when you compare it to Going for the One, difficult to say. I think the other thing about that record is when you listen to it, it doesn't seem coherent. And maybe that's one of the things, if maybe they had spent more time on that, they could have sort of worked out and worked through. Mm-hmm. But when I was going and spending some time with it here in preparation for this, spending much more time than I normally do with Tormato, what I found was if you sort of don't get distracted with, you know, a lot of John's very wordy vocal lines and everything else, but if you sort of pay attention, you can really hear some cues or some clues to what Alan, Chris, and Steve were going to do on drama. Yeah. So, you know, it's a fascinating thing the more time I spend with it.
So Mark, is it an album that you spend some time with?
More so now than I did before. It was one of those records where, again, it wasn't really my favorite by any stretch of the imagination, but as I started getting into making records and producing and stuff like that, I was always fascinated when I read these stories about how, you know, the tape machines were unaligned and this and that, and they were talking about how it sounded so terrible and how Rick was bringing in new kinds of keyboards that were not even really properly like developed yet, and they didn't like the sound of them, yet they used it. Yeah, I think the main problem with Tormato, the way I look at it, is that people got divided into camps. You know, it was like John and Rick were writing together, and then, you know, Steve and Chris were writing together, and nobody wanted to work on each other's stuff. They thought that their material was better. And when that happens, you know what happens. It turns into garbage, right? And then that's what I think the problem is. When they did go away for the one, they were all happy that Rick was back. You know, they were all high-fiving each other and, you know, celebratory situation. So it turned out to be a fantastic record. Now the honeymoon was over with Tormato, you know, and then all the kind of headbutting started. And then, you know, and on top of it, you know, the studio needed a serious overhaul by the sounds of it. And all those things got together and made for a sort of, you know, not so great record. And again, that whole thing about the rhythm guitar thing that I found out didn't help either. So.
No. It's interesting, isn't it? We've mentioned it on the podcast many times. How many times Steve Howe has complained about what's happened to his guitar parts in an album. And we have pointed out that most of the time Steve isn't in the same room and sometimes isn't in the same country as the rest of the band when they're recording. Yeah. So perhaps he ought to do something about that. But there's plenty of good music, isn't there, on Tormato. Ken Fuller?
Absolutely there is, yeah. I mean, On the Silent Wings of Freedom is a great song. Release is a great rocking song. I think the difference for me is, notwithstanding the sound quality in the mixing, there's how can I say, too many cheesy bits on this album. you know, release is great, but then you have the crowd cheering and everything.
Yeah,
in there, you know, why did they do that? don't kill the whale with the version with the whale song in it. Arriving UFO is well, okay. So it's a mixture. Onward, though, you look at Onward. What a beautiful track song that is. So it's a very much a mixed bag, I think. It's not coherent.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Ken Gregory, how does this fit? How does Tormato fit with the rest of the Yes output? Could it have been a real classic, do you think? Is there enough Yes-iness about it?
Sure. I put this in the context of Friends of the Palaver and regional tribute band Total Mass Retain. I saw them last night, and their set included Future Times Rejoice, set included On the Silent Wings of Freedom. And they're doing that material interspersed with Heart of the Sunrise and other Yes classics, and it holds up in that context. And of course, when you do that, you have consistent production from song to song because it's the same tribute band. So I'm delighted when I hear those tracks. So obviously, my answer to your question is yes.
Absolutely right. Well, I mean, one of the things that I love about it, and you've got to remember that I got into Yes by being lent a cassette tape, as I've told the story many times. On one side was Tormato, on the other side was 90125, and 90125 was in the charts when I started listening to the band. So Tormato was my first ever experience of the progressive, if you want to call it that, side of Yes. But one of the things which really stuck out to me dramatically was Chris Squire's bass sound on this album and the energy of Alan White. So let me go back to Paul. Chris Squire's bass sound there, it just seems dramatically different to anywhere else in Yes. Why do you think he only kept it to Tormato, this version of his bass sound?
Yeah, it's such a great comment, Kevin, because I'm just picturing myself, if that was my first journey into like sort of the progressive side, the pre-90125 Yes, how I would have reacted to that bass sound, because, you know, hearing just the bass sound in that's all over Fragile, just that classic distorted sort of punchy bass. You know, for me, the Tormato bass sound comes up a little flat. And I don't know if that's one of the things that maybe is something that they would have liked to go back and fix, or if they had to dial back some of the distortion to make room for the crowd noise in the mix. But I think maybe the preference overall was for the little chunkier bass, because while the bass is really cool in Tormato, there's a lot of that sort of flanging phase in there. I think it comes up a little flat for me compared to like the, if you don't mind me using the term, the meaty bass tone that we hear in Drama. That's just, you know, takes it sort of to the next level.
Interesting. And let's go on to Rick Wakeman's keyboards there. We've already mentioned, Mark mentioned that he used something called the Birotron, which I believe he sunk in typical Rick Wakeman style, sunk a lot of his personal money into the development of this, and then only a few were ever made. And I think there's only one left in the world which works at the moment, or two or something like that. But for me, I think there's some great Rick keyboards on this, and I actually rather like the Birotron. Now, Ken, what about you? Ken Fuller, what do you think of the keyboards?
I, to be honest, until Mark mentioned it on that podcast and following up, reading a bit about it, I hadn't really, I didn't notice it was a distinctively different keyboard sound. I thought it fit with the overall album just fine. So I was always happy with it. It wasn't exceptional for me. Now, maybe it's my ears, but it went well with the songs.
Yeah. So, Mark, you and I have talked many, many times, and very recently, about the choice of tones which Mr. Rick Wakeman sometimes goes in for. But do you agree with Ken? It sounds pretty good on Tormato.
Some of it is pretty good. There's other parts of it that I find kind of abrasive. I mean, some of it is not maybe necessarily his fault. A lot of it could have been helped with in the mix, because, for example, one of the greatest things that I've ever saw was there was this gear guide thing that was done by Don Airey of Deep Purple, where they went through his keyboard setup. And he always said that whenever you use a Moog, for example, that you must add a flanger and you must add a delay to it. And the combination of those two effects with a Moog makes it sound absolutely like otherworldly. I tried it myself and it's just absolutely fantastic. And if you don't do that, then you sometimes get this kind of like video game, like sound from it. Whereas if you don't add those things to it, it gives it that kind of really sweepy Pink Floyd lush sound to it. And I think that's part of the time. The problem is that Rick is such a flashy technical player that if you don't put stuff to kind of soften the tones a bit or to make them sound grandiose, like a little bit of reverb, then it really sounds like Pac-Man gone crazy sometimes, you know?
Yes, indeed. Let's go to Ken Gregory now then. So we've already mentioned the slightly silly aspects of this album, Circus of Heaven being the classic. So what's your view of Circus of Heaven particularly? Is it just too silly to have made it onto a disc?
Oh, wouldn't this be an Ahmet Erdogan question? Yeah, was he involved in this? I believe one of their...
Yeah.
It's a shame because the music industry giveth and the music industry taketh away. So, you know, you need to capture the attention of the big wigs, but sometimes their involvement is a little too much.
I think what Ken's trying to say is, yes, there's no way this should have been on a disc.
Excellent.
Yes.
It's something, again, that we spoke about was Rick Wakeman's double album, Rhapsodies, very recently on the YMP, how some of that got on there. And we decided that perhaps it was some kind of a cruel joke by Rick Wakeman himself at the expense of his outgoing A&M record label. So this, of course, precipitated both the Paris sessions, which were disastrous, and also the breakup of the band and into drama and so on. And it's one of those, the history of the band is so tortuous that it's in some ways not really worth saying, if you didn't have Tomato, could you have had drama? But I am going to say that. Joe, what do you think? Was it necessary to go through the pain of Tomato and Paris in order to get something as great as drama?
Necessary? Maybe not. Like I said, when I was listening to this most recently, you can hear sort of the where things were going towards drama, at least with the three of them anyway. And I think, Mark, you had said, you know, that John and Rick had sort of broken off and were writing together, and Chris and Steve were writing together. So, you know, that's, and we've talked about this on our podcast sort of repeatedly with Yes and sort of the ebb and flow. When everyone is writing together, you get these monumental landmark albums. When they split up and two people lock themselves in a room somewhere, Yes doesn't come across quite as strong. So, it's a long-winded way of saying, in the sense that Rick and John needed to leave and Trevor and Jeff had to come in order for that sort of, and in that particular case, unexpected cohesion, I think.
Yeah,
essentially. But I don't know that you needed to have the disastrous Paris sessions in order to get there.
No. Oh, it's a fascinating time.
But Kevin,
yeah, go on.
Wasn't there also the aborted XYZ project before drama?
Yes, indeed there was, and we're going to come on to talking about that. In fact, next week I think on the YMP, and there was also Run with the Fox, which is one of my favourite things ever.
Favorite things ever. Awesome. Yeah. I love it.
It's fantastic. I love it. I'm currently learning the bass part and the Squire bass part to that. So I'm really enjoying myself very much. It's only the second thing I've ever learned on bass guitar. So it's a great fun at the moment. But yes, there was. I mean, there were lots of other ingredients that went into creating the situation of drama. But we are talking, and let's bring it to a close. I'm going to ask each one of you a question. And I'm going to ask you to pretend that you are the producer, you're the record company, and you're hearing Tomato. What do you do with it? Do you shelve it? Do you send it back for more overdubs and things? Do you just release it as it is? What do you do? So let's start with Mark.
I would definitely get them to go back and do some further overdubbing in a remix.
Excellent. Ken Fuller?
Yeah, I think I agree with Mark wholeheartedly on that one.
Excellent. And Paul?
I think I release it as a two-song EP with six bonus tracks.
Excellent. Okay, so Ken Gregory?
Oh, boy. Can I take this question to the next level? Can I hire John Anderson to play acoustic guitar alongside with Tomato? Do we have the resources in this question?
Anything you like. Okay. Okay, so finishing off with Joe then.
Can we send them back to re-record everything?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, because musically there really is, and I've got to give some credit to our friend Tom Corcoran, who I just troll mercilessly with this album. It's really not as terrible as I led on to believe. It's sort of a role that I play. Mm. And so there's a lot here, you know, I guess in real estate terms, it's a house with good bones, but it just needs some work. So definitely something needs to be done, but it should be released. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, I believe the master tapes haven't turned up yet. So there's no chance of really going back properly and making a better job of it as yet, but you never know. You know, one day they may turn up, and perhaps we'll be brought on as executive producers. Wouldn't that be lovely? And produce something really.
I think it'd be appropriate. Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so that, all seven of us, that'd be great.
What could possibly go wrong?
Okay, so thank you very much indeed, everyone. Joe and two Kens and Paul and Mark for that fantastic Tomato two pence. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us along, Kevin. It's been a pleasure.
Kevin, thank you.